Hey guys, it's Albert. Thanksgiving's in the books, and so we're going to look forward to the coaching carousel of 2019, and I'm going to tell you which opening I think is going to be the most attractive one in January. Then, as always, we hit all the news with Connor and subbing in for Jenny this week. It is one of our editors, Bette Marston, will break down all the news of Week 12. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, we're back. Week 12 is in the books now. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And we're past Thanksgiving now. It's almost December. And that means for a lot of people, their teams are out of it. You're looking towards the draft. And for some of you, you're looking towards the coaching carousel that has been spinning every year at the rate of about seven or eight openings. I think we're probably going to get right around that number this year.
Whoa. Can we start over?
Now we have to.
I sort of like that. Can we actually keep going?
Wait, hold on. Now hold I got a showroom. Hold on.
Let's keep going.
I got a showroom.
We're good. We're good.
They substituted the Vanessa Carlton video with the booger mobile.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
As he's like going down this.
Moving yesterday, and I was like,
that's pretty good.
Sorry about that.
No, but we're gonna keep that in the pod. We're gonna keep taping.
That's worth it.
No question. All right.
All right. No, it's 30 seconds. So as long as I get it off, okay.
I'm willing to take that risk.
What a great song that was, by the way.
All right. So before I was so rudely interrupted by the Booger Mobile, we're going to probably have about like norm. What's normal, guys? And we'll bring you guys in right off the top. Bette Marston, our editor extraordinaire, is sitting in for Jenny Varentes this week. Connor Orr is here as usual. And guys, I'm looking at the potential openings. I know you guys have them in front of you. I think the Browns opening is the best one. And it's probably been, I mean, how long since you could say that about the Browns being the most attractive opening? And their job has been open a lot. The most attractive opening on the market. I love where they're at quarterback. I think Baker Mayfield's got a chance to be a top five quarterback in the league. I think you look at him from a leadership standpoint, the way those guys follow him. When he said that stuff about Hugh Jackson on Sunday, he was talking for the whole team. And on top of that, like I think you've got a GM in John Dorsey who's built like solid scouting infrastructure. It's not a gong show there anymore. And if you look at the young players, at the under 25 players there, Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward, Larry Ogunjobi, Nick Chubb, there's a lot of good, you know, like, good young players that are going to be there for a while. And so I just look at that organization, and you probably got to be careful, like, and you got to make sure that you feel comfortable with Jimmy Haslam, right? Because ownership's a big part of this, and what coaches will tell you is the ownership's the one thing you can't change. Like, you go somewhere, you have to be comfortable with the owner because you are not changing that. I think the Browns is the best. I think the Browns is going to be the most attractive job on the market.
I look at it through two different lenses. I think if you want to win right away, I think that Cleveland is definitely an attractive job. And if you're the kind of coach who isn't concerned about someone like Jimmy Haslam getting involved, then I think that's a good job. But, you know, this reminds me of maybe 5 or 6 years ago, how many of us were saying that about the 49ers, you know, and saying, oh, man, this team is 25 and under, is, you know, Colin Kaepernick, you know, all these guys across the board. This team is stocked five deep of talent. This is the best coaching job on the market. Everyone's going to want this. And I think
When they hired Tom Sula?
I think so. Yeah. So you look at it from that perspective. If you're a coach, say, okay, I can go here and win right away. Team's got some attitude. As long as you're confident in yourself, I think that's one thing. But you know, if I'm a head coach and I'm, I think the way that I normally do, which is, you know, I need to protect my family. I need to have a long-term job. I'm looking at that Bengals job, but if that comes open, holy smokes! I mean, that is college tenure appointment level, you know, security.
So.
And not only that, but you can bring your best friends on staff and nobody cares. And, you know, you just get blown out every week and it's not a big deal.
Marvin Lewis was hired my first year out of college.
Jeez.
I mean, you may have been in high school.
What, 2003?
Oh, I just started high school.
Yeah.
You just started high school, okay?
Yeah, I was a sophomore in high school.
Oh my God! So I'm way older than
shopping
you guys.
An American Eagle.
Yeah, I was living in Cranford, New Jersey, and I was a copy editor at the Asbury Park Press. my first year out of college, and Marvin Lewis was named the head coach of the Bengals. So there's some merit to what you're saying.
Also means that that job's not going to come available. But right. I think out of the five that we had thought of, the Packers, the Ravens, the Bucks, the Jets, and the Browns, which are currently available. I think I agree, although our resident Bucks fan, Bette Marson, might have something to say about that.
Oh yeah, I mean I would say honestly, out of all the jobs that might come available, I think the Ravens would be one of the best for.
That's true too.
Yeah.
The opportunity to work with Lamar Jackson, that kind of seems to be the route that team is going in right now. They got a handful of guys. Gus Edwards has played really well at running back for them the past couple of weeks. The opportunity to get to play with to coach those guys might be pretty attractive.
Terrell Suggs might be coming back. I think he's coming back next year again. Seriously. Yeah.
I mean, you got the veterans. You got the young guys there too. So
I don't think so much of it boils down to what you think of the quarterback too. Like if you like Sam Darnold more than the other quarterbacks, then the Jets job looks better. Then the Jets job looks like a really, really good job if you like Sam Darnold. If you like Baker Mayfield, same goes for the Browns. If you like Lamar Jackson, same goes for the Ravens. So a lot of this is sort of just, subjective. The other job that's interesting to me at least is Green Bay. And it's the chance to work with Aaron Rodgers for maybe the next 5 years. And the other thing I like about that is it gives you like a nice long runway to find the next one. Like, you're not pigeonholed into, okay, I have to find the guy. We come in, and now we have to draft the guy right away. Like, you don't have to do that there. Like, you get there, you've got one of the greatest quarterbacks, or at least one of the most talented quarterbacks of all time, for the next 5 years or so, and you've got a ton of time to find the next one.
My fear with the Packers job, right, would be that, yes, you get to work with Aaron Rodgers, but you also have to work with Aaron Rodgers,
right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was doing reporting on that Ben McAdoo story last year when he was still the coach of the Giants and he was in trouble, one of the big tenets of, what the nicest thing that anybody had to say about him was he learned how to handle Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
And not a lot of people did it before that, and not a lot of people have done it well since then. And it's very difficult. He challenges you in a way that he doesn't challenge other coaches.
Yep.
He likes to run things like Peyton Manning, but maybe not as diplomatically as Peyton Manning has. And, that's hard. That's hard for a coach to come in and deal with.
I know it's been frustrating for McCarthy, where basically Aaron checks an audible so much that it's hard for a play caller to get into a rhythm. And there's a rhythm to all of this. And I know that it's been frustrating for McCarthy to some degree, because it's like you spend the whole week getting ready, and here's what we're going to do, and here's the things we want to establish, and here's how the first quarter is going to go, and then that's going to lead to X, Y, and Z. And then you get to game day, and all of a sudden it's like Aaron Rodgers is just tearing the plan up and doing what he wants out there. And that part of it I know can be frustrating for a coach. So you're right. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback, maybe not for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I think the most attractive thing for a coach who is coming into a new job might be able to, or the most attractive thing would be being able to put your mark on a team.
Yeah.
Like if you come in and you have Aaron Rodgers there, that coach needs to do what Aaron Rodgers is doing.
Exactly.
He does not get an opportunity to do his own thing.
It's Aaron Rodgers' team. It's not your team.
Yes. Yeah.
You're renting space.
Okay, so we'll get into the news now. You guys know how this works. We've got five news items to plow through. News item number one for the week, and this one is really interesting because of the expectations that this team had coming into the year. The Jaguars lost their seventh straight game, falling in Buffalo to Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. On Monday, the team fired offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett and benched quarterback Blake Bortles. They'll go with Cody Kessler this week. Scott Milinovich is their new offensive coordinator. Everything's kind of come undone there, to the point where Josh Allen was flexing on them.
He did Jalen Ramsey's touchdown celebration.
He did the Jalen Ramsey celebration at the end of that game, which I don't think anybody thought that we would get to Thanksgiving weekend and you would have Josh Allen flexing on the Jaguars. But that's where we were on Sunday, and the Jaguars have a boatload of problems, guys. Like, they can throw Hackett overboard. They can bench Bortles. The Bills are coming due on a lot of that free agent spending. I believe they're something like $20 million over the cap for next year already, without even spending a dime on a draft pick from 2019, without going and signing anybody else. They're already way over the cap. it feels like the window has shut on the Jaguars. Like what that, like that, at least with this, the current group that they put together, it feels like that window's shut, because I don't know that you're going to be able to get a quarterback in there and get that quarterback competitive fast enough to be able to capitalize on this group of players.
Unless, you know, unless it's Teddy Bridgewater, unless you somehow pry Derek Carr away from the Raiders or something crazy, like, you know, Matt Stafford away from the Lions, you know, if the Lions are going in that direction, you know. But to me, with a few things that are strange, Nathaniel Hackett, such a fall guy in this situation. I mean, crafted one of the greatest game plans of probably the last 5 years against the Patriots in the playoffs last year. Was such a loyal soldier to Marone. Has followed him around in a lot of places. Well-regarded around the league. And it's just such a weird thing that, like, you pick that guy. Like, that's the guy that's got to go when, you know, all this other stuff, I think, is happening
it
around
just,
them.
You it know? Just feels like they, like, it's almost like, I don't know if Marone's out of, like, out of levers to pull, you know? I mean, he's suspended Ramsey.
He's still very
summer.
Early in the coaching survival playbook, so I think he's got some time.
What will be next?
Yeah, start running down your steps here.
Next would be calling out management or he's an offensive coach, so next would be that he's insisting on spending more time with the defensive side of the ball to learn how things operate there. He's still got time.
Just make sure it gets out there. Like, there'll be some sourced information that, like, you know, Marone was spending a little more time around the defensive players this week.
Getting himself involved.
They don't need to rebuild. There's still players worth keeping there. Like, you still have, all right, like, Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey, if you can get past all of the other stuff. Yannick Ngakoue, I think you do what you need to do to sign him, because he can be an elite player for a long, long time to come. It's not like they don't have talented players in the roster that can be there long term. But because of the cap situation, you're going to have to lop off some of the expensive veterans. And so is a Malik Jackson gone? Is Calais Campbell still there next year? There are some serious decisions that they're going to have to make, and they're probably going to have to get rid of a player or two that they don't want to get rid of.
Yeah, I think that's the hard thing. And it's such a shame, because I think that this was an example of an NFL team doing things right for a long time. Mm-hmm. They stuck by the guys. You know, Shad Khan stuck by Dave Caldwell, let him build that thing from the ground up. He drafted a lot of talented players. Mm-hmm. I think they were flexible at a time when the quarterback position, there was just a complete drought at the position, and they did something about it. They built a team around a running back, made it to the AFC Championship game, and they did all the stuff right. You know, they put their faith behind the right people, and sometimes it just doesn't work out.
And I think it's like this is the cost of getting it wrong in the quarterback.
Yeah.
I think that's what it boils down to. And like what I remember somebody saying this to me, somebody said this to me, and I thought it was the best way to put it was, you don't need to have a star quarterback to win. But if you don't have a really good one, you basically need to be perfect just about everywhere else.
Right, and they've stood behind Bortles for so many seasons now, and just he's taken so much heat for many, many years, for the past several seasons. And finally, like, you know, they bench him now. I guess that's the end of it. Like, I don't foresee them moving on with him. So, I don't know. It's the end of an era, I guess, in Jacksonville.
Okay, so speaking of impactful things, Connor, there was something pretty impactful that happened this weekend at the Meadowlands. So we're going to go to news item number two and talk about, like, there's just this, there are moments that we're going to remember from the 2018 season, and I think Connor was right in the middle of one of them.
Yeah, the Patriots beat the Jets 27-13. The real news here, obviously, when my kids ask me one day about my prouder days in the business, I will say that it was chasing down Cordarrelle Patterson after the game and asking him why he grabbed Henry Anderson, his name? Henry Anderson in the crotch. And being able to show him that video, being able to see the look on his face, and then him saying, oh, shit, I got to stick around and answer questions about this. I will say it was definitely the best quote I've ever gotten from a player about anything. I don't know how we want to handle this. Is this going to be a beeped
I think we're
scenario,
well.
Or?
I think you just go, Connor, and then you let them clean it up on the back end.
Okay.
However they want to handle it, they can handle it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just.
I will say from the editing side, I had to look up to see if we which of these words we had to star out. And I ended up not doing any of them because I was like, it's a direct quote. People need to see the quote. So I don't know.
So when asked why Henry Anderson, why he grabbed Henry Anderson in the crotch, and you can go back and watch this on Game Pass, CBS stays on this moment. Yeah. I timed it with a stopwatch. Almost 4 seconds of just a guy grabbing another guy. You know, and so Cordell Patterson
with a stopwatch.
Said,
wait,
I timed it with a stopwatch because I was like, "This is odd. They never stick on anything for more than a second or two. It's all rapid cuts.
There are lots of uses of the stopwatch in football. That's probably for the first time.
It was also just like a guy's butt was right there on your entire screen. Yeah.
So Cordell Patterson says, "You know, why did you do it? I'm a grown man. I don't need no one's ass and dick and." In my face, right after I tweeted that, my wife texted me and said, "What time are you coming home? You know, what's going on? What's your workload looking like?" And I just sent her this text and I said, "This is what's happening at work today." So I'm gonna be a little late because I gotta go talk to Henry Anderson about this. And you know, I think the best part about this story is this is a defeated Jets locker room. I mean, they haven't beaten the Patriots since 2015. Everybody's miserable. No one wants to be there. And Henry Anderson, to his credit, answered questions for like 15 minutes about this, like got into the science behind it, told us why he thought it happened. Really went in depth about it. So just certainly one of the proudest moments of my journalism
career. I think the real star of the show, though, the real star of the show was Henry Anderson's fiance. Because I just tweeted out like dude dot 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 with the retweet from the. I think hashtag free Philip Dorsett's the guy who initially tweeted the video that went crazy on the internet. And so she responds to me, not cool, that's my boo. Now, at this point, I don't know who this is. So I go and I look and click on her Twitter page. And sure enough, like the banner or whatever, the background right there, it's like her engagement photos with Henry Anderson. And so then I'm about to go on TV. And so we have to figure out, is it fiance, wife, like everything else? So I do some background work there and find out the engagement photos are about a week old, and so I'm like, all right, like, well, unless this is a shotgun wedding, then probably still fiance. so she comes back to me, and I retweet her, I say comment from the aggrieved party's camp, and she retweets that, and then she responds, I don't blame him, meaning I don't blame Cordell Patterson for grabbing that. Then later on she retweets a picture of like it's just a picture of me talking about them, talking about like what happened on TV, and I say her name, and then the NBC account like tweets a picture of me talking about it. It says, now you're really famous, Saren. I don't want to mispronounce her name, Saren Rari. Don't mess with her, boo. And she responds to that, OMG, this is awesome. I always got his back, dot, 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 and front. So she is the star of the show. She is fantastic. Shout out to Saren Rari. We can move on from this now because I think getting a little uncomfortable here.
This would be a fun-ended job.
Okay, getting a little uncomfortable.
A lot of weird beeps.
All right.
A lot of weird beeps.
And please don't beep it. Please don't beep it.
Shout out to Beth, too. Just a sort of a peek behind the operation here. When this happened in the middle of the game, Beth is the person I call, and I'm like, is this a story? You know? And she's
of
like,
course.
Yeah. Like, yeah. She's like, yes. Go.
Connor's tweet got something like 4,000 likes. It went crazy, and I was like, "Of course you have to go report this."
Hang on. I'm going
to
check. Like, let's real quick before we move on. I want to get a status update on that tweet. What do we?
It
got
had a
here?
Good ratio. It had like one that like several retweets. Got
so
a
I'm doing control
likes,
find
retweets.
Dick. There it is.
Hopefully, there's only one of those on my timeline.
Yeah. So 5,745 likes. 1,712 retweets. Good job, Connor.
That's good ratio.
Guys, while you're on my Twitter page,
hashtag journalism.
Some magazine stories that I've written, too. I mean, if you want to retweet those, you know, all that other stuff, that'd be good. Yeah.
It's like one retweet, three retweets, 1.7 thousand retweets.
I think I found the formula.
Yeah, you got to make that your pinned tweet now.
All right. Bet news item number three.
The Seahawks edged the Panthers 30-27 with a strike from Russell Wilson to Tyler Lockett, 43-yarder, setting up the game-winning field goal. pushing Seattle to 6-5. And in this game, Seattle won the crucial tiebreaker over the Panthers for the NFC playoffs. And that was the story of the game. Seahawks have won, I think, 3 straight. Someone can check me on that. Yeah. But this was, you know, coming into this, this was a must win for Seattle and for Carolina. So it's, you know, between the two of them, it's, they definitely have the leg up here.
I don't want to be like no one's talking about guy, you know, like why isn't everybody talking about guy? Like, I don't want to be that guy, but why isn't everybody talking? Why aren't more people talking about the job Pete Carroll is doing? We did a lot of reporting a couple months ago on all the stuff that was going wrong in that organization, everything that caused the blow up and the whole Legion of Boom era to come apart. This is a team that has gone from that group to not having Cliff Averill, not having Michael Bennett, not having Cam Chancellor, not having Earl Thomas, not having Richard Sherman. Like, that's 5 guys who are like foundation pieces of a half decade of winning, a half decade at the top of the league. And I think it's so impressive what they've done to be able to just turn it all over, and now they're right back in the playoff hunt. Pete Carroll deserves a ton of credit for this. And I think a huge part of it is they got back to their roots. That's one big part of it. They got back to their roots, wanted to create competition. They're running the ball really well. They used to run the ball with Marshawn Lynch, and that's a piece of it too. I think the other piece of it, and this reminds me a little bit of like New England when you went back and they started to take apart like the Teddy Bruschi, Rodney Harris, and Ty Law Patriots, right? And what you need to have to kind of bridge the gap from one to the other without really falling off, you need really good quarterback play. And by the time the Patriots were lopping those guys off and getting rid of some of the older guys and turning it over to what's been the group for the last 7 or 8 years, Brady was so good he wouldn't let them, you know, take a 5-11, take a 6-10. And that's sort of where Russell Wilson is now. I mean, Russell Wilson's playing really, really well. I don't think he's the MVP of the league, but starting to think he should be in the discussion.
I think that his ability, the Seahawks' ability to change the narrative, because what was the common theme between all those big kind of destructive locker room pieces on the Seahawks was that the defense hated Russell Wilson. They thought he wasn't a complimentary football player. They thought he was this sort of mole for management, you know. And that, no matter what you say about a player, that affects the way that he comes to work. That affects the way that he plays. He can feel that, you know, when people don't want to give him a high five after a touchdown. You know, he knows what, you know, that's something you carry with you. And I think that a lot of that is off his back now, you know, and this is his team. He's in control. And to get back to, like you said, the Seahawks used to cut more draft picks than any team in the NFL. I know it was true in 2013 and 2014, back when that whole thing started. You know, they would churn the roster constantly. They would just pick guys that wanted to be there. They were hungry enough to be in an NFL roster, and that's all that mattered. And to get back to that, like you said, with a quarterback, I don't think we should be as surprised as we are that there's a very legitimate shot that they make the playoffs.
It was interesting, Pep, because I remember hearing, like I think it got to the point, like what you're talking about, where there were some guys who were just on scholarship there. You know what I mean? Like, and it's that's not the way that place was built. And some of those guys would talk to the younger guys about, like, oh, you should have seen what it was like in 2012. Practice was more intense than games. We were ripping each other's throats out here. And this was a really kind of edgy place. And what happens naturally? Guys get paid. Guys get comfortable. How hard is it for Pete Carroll to sell the idea that the right cornerback spot is open when Richard Sherman's sitting there? It's not open. The strong safety spot's open when Cam Chancellor's there. That's not open. So I think so much of it was based on, like, some of those guys, and a lot of those guys were like 5th-round picks, 6th-round picks. So much of it was based on it, like, being a meritocracy and every position being open and like the coaches willing to make changes from week to week and all of that. And I think it got to the point, like to your point, where guys were on scholarship and guys were sort of entitled to certain positions and certain roles on the team. And I think Pete felt that. And I think now they've been able to turn it over where it's back maybe the way it was 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Connor, who this morning did a piece on 3 different playoff scenarios. Seattle was in the playoffs in every single scenario.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize they were in the – yeah.
Yep, every single one.
So you're really confident that they're going to
– So I did 3 different – I did basically picking the favorites or in close games the home team. I did that one. I did one where we peppered in some moderate upsets. And then I did – I just want to get the full name of this correct because It's important for this scenario. But the third one was where the Cleveland Browns make the playoffs. So we called it the Greg Williams Rages Against the Machine late season Fitzmagic conjuring Lamar Jackson destroys the planet scenario. And apparently the Seahawks made that one too. So I think I like their path, I think, into the postseason.
Yeah.
So.
I just think it's so impressive that they're even talking about it. If you think about this now, they played two real close games against the Rams, right?
Yes.
Okay. If they win those games, if they found a way to pull out those games, I think they were decided by a total of 8 points, right? Like those two games, very winnable games for them. They would right now be tied with the Rams on top of the NFC West with the tiebreaker. So they're that close to being right there with the Rams.
And they have a great schedule to close. They have, I think they play San Francisco twice. They play the Vikings. They play the Chiefs, and they play Arizona. So those are all, I mean, 3 of 5 of those easily. You know, 10-6 is feasible for these guys.
Okay, so we'll jump to the other side of the ledger there with news item number 4. The Vikings knocked off the Packers 24-17 on Sunday night. Aaron Rodgers threw for just 198 yards on 17 of 28 passing in the loss. Like I said, like as much of a good surprise as Seattle's been, I feel like Green Bay's sort of been the bad surprise of the year. And there was like a lifeless quality to it on Sunday. Like, I don't know what else to call it. Like, there was a lifeless quality to that team. And it felt like they're playing out the string to some degree. Here's the question I want to ask you guys. Does Aaron Rodgers deserve more blame than he's getting?
Go ahead, Bet. You go first. You take this.
Oh, man. Does he deserve more blame than he's getting? I would have to say no. I mean, I think it's the pieces around, like, the pieces around him are struggling. They've had a couple of issues with,
it's a hard question.
Yeah.
He's got a good number one receiver in Devontae Adams, $14 million a year receiver. Like, Jimmy Graham's banged up, so you know that.
Yeah, but Jimmy Graham's hurt. He's struck. That's a piece that's hurt.
He's got offensive line pieces are moving in and out there.
Sure. He's got Aaron Jones, who I think is a good young running back. Here's the way I'd answer it. Let's go to you. What do you think?
I think yes, because the way that you can – what stood out to me was a couple of these last few games, the failed fourth down conversion and the missed throws in this past week's game. Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy are looking at each other like a married couple staying together for the kids. Like, they're just – like, when they turn their backs on each other, they're mad. They're not living life to the fullest because the other one is dragging them down, you know? Yeah. And I feel like there's a real just permeating tension throughout that whole thing. I think it affects the play, certainly. Aaron Rodgers has made some bad throws. You know, he's missed some wide open passes.
Yeah.
But why is that, right? Is it because, you know, he's frustrated? He's going into the snap frustrated with the play call.
He's not bought into what they're doing.
He's not bought into what they're doing. You know, I feel like that is the root to me of what's going on. That's what it looks like from the outside looking in.
But we talked about this at the top. Like, do you think a new coach will solve this?
Right.
Like, is that, I don't.
And that's what would be scary, right? If you want to take that job, is you have to figure out
Aaron Rodgers first.
Aaron Rodgers, yeah.
Right. And I think, so here's how I'm going to answer it. I think it's not like he's a bad quarterback, all right? And it's not like you wouldn't take him. But the bar is higher for him, and it should be higher for him. And you don't judge him against Andy Dalton. You don't judge him against Derek Carr. You don't judge him against even someone like Phillip Rivers, who's an excellent quarterback. Mm-hmm. He is he's capable of being an all-time great, so you judge him against all-time greats. And I just feel like if you're comparing him, say, against Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning would not let this happen to their teams. Like, there's a reason why those teams – they consistently, I have to look it up. I don't think Brady or Manning played on any team that won less than 10 games. If you want to go back, I think with Manning, it was probably like the year Jim Mora got fired. It was like the last time he won less than 10 games. And no matter what was going on around them, they were always able to, like it never got in the way of winning, you know? And last year, with all the tension in New England, Brady still got to the Super Bowl, right? All the things going wrong this year, they're 8-3. Like, I just feel like we have to hold Rodgers to the same like the standard's just different. Like, and I think it's okay to hold a guy to that sort of standard and say the bar's higher for you, dude. You are, like, you're going to be compared to the all-time greats when you're done. And so we got to compare it. That's where the bar is for you now. And I just, there's part of me that feels like that Brady or a Manning would not have allowed this to happen.
You can't reseed, you know. This is kind of the difference between Peyton and Eli. When there's trouble, Eli seems to kind of reseed into a team. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Aaron Rodgers is sort of following that playbook where he's just, you know, stepping back and saying, well, not my problem. You know, right. I didn't pick these guys. I didn't call these plays, you know. And, you know, and this could be, you know, totally inaccurate, you know, but it's just what it feels like. It's just what it looks like from the outside looking in.
Yeah, so Brady, all right, Brady's worst regular season as a starting quarterback, the worst team that he quarterbacked. Was a 9-7 team in 2003 or 2002, which was the sandwiched in between the first Super Bowl and the second and third Super Bowls, right? Peyton Manning's worst year as a starting quarterback was his rookie year, 3-13.
Yep.
Right now, Brady and Rodgers weren't playing as rookies, so we can't really compare them. Okay. After that, he only had one year where he didn't win at least 10 games, and that was the 2001 Colts. That was the year that Jim Moore got fired. But every other team won at least 10 games. So if you want to throw out Peyton Manning's rookie year, you take all the years that Brady and Manning were starting quarterbacks in the league, and they won double-digit games every year except two between the two of them. They each had one year under 10 wins. And so I think it's fair to hold them to that standard. Like, there's quarterbacks that you can win with, and there's a lot of them. And then there are quarterbacks that are able to load you on their back, and you're winning because of them. And that's Brady. That's right. There aren't very many that you can say that where it's like no matter what you put around him, like you're still going to get to like 9 or 10 wins. Aaron Rodgers should be that guy. Mm-hmm. Like Aaron Rodgers should be the guy where like no matter what's going on around him, you're still getting to 10 wins. You're still getting in the playoffs. And I feel like you said, like he's letting this happen to him.
And here's one thing that I'll throw out before we kill this topic. But, you know, Mike McCarthy, this you know, is more than likely going to end up costing him the tenure in Green Bay. I don't think he'll be unemployed for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I think another team that needs a kick in the ass is going to hire him immediately.
So let me ask you this. Do you think he's Andy Reid in 2012?
Yes. Yes.
Like he's going to come out with new ideas and a new spark and everything else when he gets somewhere else.
New ideas and your message just plays better.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, you know, you listen to the same song every day and you just stop listening to the words, you know?
McCarthy is a good coach. He's just not what Aaron Rodgers needs right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
Okay. All right, Connor, news item number 5.
The Texans won their 8th straight on Monday night, rushing for 281 yards in a 34-17 romp over the Titans. What was most impressive to me, I went back every game this year and looked at how many times Deshaun Watson has gotten hit. And over the first 6 weeks, I think the high was 15 in a game, 15 times, and that's just
a lot.
That's just in the backfield.
Right.
That doesn't count, you know, against the Cowboys, there was 10 sneaks or design rushes, which added another 10 hits there. Last night, 8 combined, I think there were six in the backfield, and then he 2 design runs. If there was a third design run that he didn't even get touched on when they went into the end zone. Lamar Miller's averaged 100 yards a game each of the last 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And just it takes away any temptation Bill O'Brien would ever have to use Deshaun Watson as a design runner again. You know, he doesn't need to. And Deshaun Watson is throwing better passes. You know, this is all sort of an evolution that's happening right before our eyes. He's getting Demaryius Thomas involved in the passing game.
Yep.
And look at the way that he shredded, you know, a team that should be sound defensively. You know, they bracketed DeAndre Hopkins, and he still found a way to get him the ball. You know, he's throwing dimes right now.
And I think, like, O'Brien deserves a ton of credit because they've got legitimate holes on the offensive line and at corner. And those are two areas where it's really tough to cover up. If you've got problems, it's tough to cover those up. And they've effectively covered them up. And I think it's just sometimes you can tell, I don't want to say team loves each other, like they love each other, but there's something going on there with that team too, where it's just, I think, you know, Brian Gain, those guys like kind of said, okay, like this is the type of guy we want. And we want a lot more guys who are sort of like Deshaun Watson from a personality standpoint. And I think it really kind of jumps through the screen, like watching them. Like you can see it. Like you can see it's tough. They're tough. They're together. There's just something to the way that they play that I think that you can see this intangible. Where I don't know if they're going to win a playoff game. because typically the team that's come out of the AFC South has not been the best team in the playoff bracket. But it does feel like they're building something there around Deshaun Watson that's going to be sustainable well beyond this year.
And this was the most consistent they looked up to this point in the season, yeah, at least in my opinion. I mean, 8 straight wins shows it. And Lamar Miller looks great, too. I mean, he ran for, what, 160-plus yards or something. So
they got
a lot of things working there.
No doubt. I think watching them and the Colts go at it the next couple of years could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt about that.
Okay, so now you guys know what time it is. It's the time of week that I, frankly, look forward to from the time we get off on Tuesday to the time we're back the following Tuesday. We got Connor's fantasy update. What's going on with the club?
Big W. Obviously, we're squarely out of playoff contention. We were eliminated. I should say we're not totally eliminated. I would have to score basically double what I've been scoring for each of the next 2 or 3 weeks, I think, to make it into the playoffs. But Jenny's not here, but I've sort of started the groundwork as her quality control assistant. Been researching opponents for her. I've sort of been mapping out some waiver claims that will negatively impact her future opponents, and so I feel good. You know, I feel like
collusion there.
Oh, yeah. I feel like this was something I needed. You know,
is there a way to, like, you could sneak players through to her or no?
I would guess she's very high in the waiver claim. You know, Jenny is like, I'm trying to think of, like, who's like the most consistent GM in football, would you say? Like, the most,
it was probably like Ted Thompson as far as the way he operated. Like, it was Ted Thompson, I
just
think.
Stuck to a belief structure. Yeah, yep. Always had competitive
teams.
Sticks
to their guns, yep.
Yeah.
No panic.
So she's very hard to sneak players through the waiver process. We have to get a little more creative. But, you know, I'm kind of going to be her Ernie Adams from here on out, operating in the shadows. And, you know, I think it's necessary. I will inevitably get fired at the end of this season. There's no way I survive and get my own team again next year. But, you know, looking forward to many happy years on Jenny's staff.
So you'll be like Hugh to Marvin Lewis then?
I can't believe, hold on, we didn't talk about this.
Yeah, we did.
This merits 30 seconds because the look on his face, on Hugh Jackson's face.
When he went in for the hug?
When he nervously, even before the hug, he's like, parsing his way through the crowd, and he's going, Baker. Just like looking at him like he's nervous. He's nervous about how he's going to be perceived by Baker. You can see it in his face.
Yep.
And then, oh my God, the stiff arm handshake, like, get out of my face. That was, I mean, if you're a Browns fan, just pure.
So
what's the word? Schadenfreude?
Sends chills on your spine.
So I'll give you,
how you pronounce it?
I'll give you guys something interesting in the way Baker handled it, too. That you guys saw what he said after the game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, about, I think it was something along the lines of, I don't have the quote in front of me, but this press conference, he said, you know, like, that, like, guy was our coach. Asked us to play for him. 2 weeks later, he's in Cincinnati, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's something, and I wrote about this on Monday, that had been circulating through the Browns locker room, their meeting rooms, over the course of really 4 days, right? So someone told me that Baker, on his way to the press conference, tapped someone on the shoulder and said, I'm just going to go and say it. And got up there and said it. So that kid's got, I honestly thought it was exactly like the flag planting at Ohio State. Because is it really an open show of, like he felt disrespected because, like, Ohio State, after all of their games, they sing the alma mater, right? Like, win or lose, they sing the alma mater on the field. It's a hokey tradition that they've been doing forever. And so when Ohio State beat Oklahoma at Oklahoma, they sung the alma mater on the field. And Baker thought it was just this, like, egregious, like, example of disrespect, which is why he planted the flag the next year. This is the same sort of thing. I mean, Hugh got fired. He went to another team. Most people would look at that and say, whatever. You know, he went to another team. He's not here anymore. But not Baker Mayfield.
Not Baker Mayfield. And probably not Greg Williams. let's be real. Yeah. Who's the marionette? Who's the guy pulling the puppet strings back there?
Absolutely. All right, guys. Appreciate you coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday morning, I put out the call for questions on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like. That means I hit the little heart on Twitter, and I give you an answer right here on the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're going to start with Ken Kopp, question number one. That's at SpecLK 19. What have you heard about whether Haskins plans to declare for the NFL draft? How do NFL scouts execs compare or rank Haskins with someone like Duke's Daniel Jones? I have heard consistently that he is likely to declare for the 2019 NFL draft. I would think that if he puts in his paperwork and they say he's going to be a first-round pick, that he would be gone. He's one of these kids that I just tell you could probably use another year in school, but if you're going to be a first-round pick, it's very, very difficult to walk away from the money. And so functionally, yeah, he could use another year in school. Would it be smart for him to do it based on all the money that's on the line? You probably want to go and take the money. How would he compare with Duke's Daniel Jones? I just tell you, I think that there's some divide on Daniel Jones, whether or not he's a starting NFL quarterback. It feels to me like, and this goes for Will Grier too at West Virginia, Jones and Grier are in this category where it's sort of in the eye of the beholder, where everyone at least likes them. It's just that some people see one or both of those guys as a, you know, sort of more of a backup type or a guy that you'd be looking to replace if you did draft him. Whereas, you know, Haskins is seen as having starter tools the same way Justin Herbert has starter tools. And so I think Haskins is probably gone. And my guess is if he does go, he'd probably go mid to late first round. Question number two from Matt Elliott. That's at Elliott M underscore three. What would you say the biggest need for the Bengals this offseason is? I would say the biggest need for the Bengals this offseason would probably still be along that offensive line. That was such a strength for them for such a long period of time. And one of the reasons why they were able to bounce back early this year was because they'd addressed it. They traded for Cordy Glenn. They drafted Billy Price. I still think they could use another player or two up there. Remember, all those teams that they had that made the playoffs had Andrew Whitworth, had Kevin Zeitler. There was real strength in the offensive line. I think that getting back there is an important thing for them, no matter who the coach is next year. And then on the flip side, I think maybe injecting a little more youth. I know they got Carl Lawson there, but a little more youth in their defensive front would be something to look at as well. Question number three from Nick Spano. That's at Nick Spano. Saw you said Harbaugh to the Jets. You think he'd be interested in the job? Yes, I do, because there's a young quarterback there in Sam Darnold. I think John Harbaugh will likely have multiple options. The biggest question with John Harbaugh is staff. Related, what would he do as far as bringing in an offensive coordinator? There have obviously been a long line of offensive coordinators that have come through Baltimore. He struggled to find continuity there, you know, in particular after he lost Gary Kubiak after a single season. So I think he would be interested in the Jets. I think he will have options, and I don't know that he'd necessarily pick the Jets among the options, but I do think that there would be some interest there based on the fact that they've got a young quarterback in Sam Darnold that he could work with and build with going forward. Question number four from Garbillion. That's at Garbillion. Speaking about offensive coordinators, do you see a scenario where Freddie Kitchens stays with the Browns next season? Not impossible, okay? I think if Baker Mayfield continues to ascend and he has played very well with Freddie Kitchens as his play caller, if he continues to ascend and they were to hire, say, a John Harbaugh, it wouldn't be without merit the idea of keeping Kitchens there. Kitchens has been a well-respected coach for a long time in the NFL now. You know, he did a very good job with Carson Palmer during the kind of twilight years of Carson Palmer's career. And so I think there is certainly merit to the idea of keeping Freddie Kitchens. If it's an offensive-minded head coach like, you know, Josh McDaniels, maybe that's less likely. But if it's one of these guys that's sort of more of the program leader type, the way John Harbaugh is, the way maybe even a Matt Campbell from Iowa State is, yeah, I do see there being a potential scenario where if Baker keeps playing this way, it might make sense to hold on to Freddie Kitchens as your offensive coordinator. Question number five, this is from Andrew Fisher at Colts Fisher. Are there any general trends for drafting certain positions, wide receiver, corner, during specific rounds? For instance, what certain draft philosophies dictate not taking wide receivers in round one? Thanks, Albert. All right, Andrew. Well, what I would tell you there is philosophically, how do you want your team to be built? I'll give you a good example. You know, looking right there at your own team, the Colts. What does Chris Ballard want? Well, clearly, Chris Ballard wants to build the team in the trenches, and he felt like they needed to get bigger and more powerful there. They spent two top 40 picks on offensive linemen this year. They spent a second rounder on a middle linebacker in Darius Leonard. They're going to build that team with big people up front on both sides of the ball, and they did veer a little bit on that in 2017 with his first-round pick, Malik Hooker. But that was more about an individual player being special, falling to them. I think really, you know, you see philosophically what they want to be, and we've seen that with different teams too. You know, the flip side of it, of course, would be, you know, what the Rams are doing and how Sean McVay wants to build his team. And, you know, it's not that they don't have strength on the offensive and defensive lines. They certainly do. They've got Andrew Whitworth. They've got Aaron Donald. But you can see how he's very specific in what he wants in receivers. And sometimes to be able to get what you want, you know, and if that focus on what you need is narrow, you have to give up draft capital to get there. And so that's, they give up a second round pick to get Sammy Watkins, and they turn around, they give up a first rounder to get Brandon Cooks. It's just, I think what you see is teams that, like, you'll see a team's philosophy in the way they draft in the first and second rounds, and then from there, you know, they have to fill out their roster in different ways. And so just look at where these teams spend their first and second round capital. That's where you'll get your answers. That's where you'll see what a GM's philosophy is. Question number six from John Appleton. That's at JAA0109. Potential new head coaches and coordinators around the league. Is Marone on the hot seat? Is Ramsey going to be a Jaguar next year? I'd say you likely have Ramsey as a Jaguar next year, because this isn't the last offseason they could deal him. They can still deal him after next offseason. So I think he will be a Jaguar at least next year. They may push the pause button on the idea of signing him to a long-term deal. This is, of course, going to be the first offseason that he's eligible for one. If he really wants to push it, then maybe things could get interesting. Is Marone on the hot seat? No. Potential new head coaches and coordinators around the league. The head coaches, I think we've been through the names, but I'll take you through them one more time. Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. Vikings offensive coordinator John DeFilippo, Cowboys secondary coach Chris Richard, some of the names I think you'll hear, Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, and then in the college ranks, I would look at guys like Matt Rhule of Baylor, Matt Campbell of Iowa State. There are going to be some teams that are going to look there in the look to the college ranks, and of course Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma. As for coordinators, the most interesting name that you're hearing now is Cliff Kingsbury, the Texas Tech coach who was just fired, who coached Johnny Manziel in college, who coached Davis Webb in college, who coached Patrick Mahomes and Baker Mayfield. Like, he has experience working with quarterbacks. He's a very creative offensive mind. We got a couple bonus questions here too, real quick. First bonus question is from Wish Him the Best Buddy Boy at WAH Third. I'm assuming this is a Browns fan. If you answer mine, you may get a new subscriber. So here I have to answer this one. Jump aboard WAH Third. You've got an answer to your question. I answered your question, I believe. Maybe not. I don't know if he's asking me that I answer. Maybe he asked a question a while ago, and then he said, may get a new subscriber. Let me look. What did he ask? What do we got? Oh, he did ask. Why are people pissed at Baker? He never said that Hugh couldn't go to Cincinnati. He just said he didn't want y'all to him because he went to Cincinnati. Yes, most of the media, most of the locker room was true. Was pissed at Hugh? Yes, they were. And I don't think too many people are pissed at Baker. I might be wrong about that, but I don't think too many people are pissed at Baker. So there you have your answer. I also got a bonus question from Lou Pellegrino, and this is involving what the podcast, our old iteration of the podcast, how many buffalo wings can the real Gresh eat in one sitting? I'm going to place the over-under because I used to be able to do like 25 at least. I think I maybe could do more than that. I'm going to put the over-under at 40. Okay, Lou? So I'm going to put the over-under at 40 buffalo wings for Gresh. And that's about as good a place as we can find to wrap things up this week. Appreciate you guys coming out. Always remember to leave us a review, leave us a rating on iTunes. You can also get to me on my Twitter page at Albert Breer, my Facebook page at Albert R. Breer, my Instagram at Albert_Breer. The more you give me feedback, the more we can make this year podcast. That's what we're trying to do here. And always remember also to listen to the MMQB family of podcasts. We've got Gary and Andy's podcast on Mondays, the deep dives in the middle of the week, the gambling podcast, and this podcast, again, the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. You can get us and the other shows all in one feed on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. We're there, same time next week. See you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.